Welcome to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. I'm here with Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the show. And if you want to introduce yourself to everyone out there listening.
Hi, Robbie. Thanks. My name is Jeff Morley. I am a journalist in Washington. I've been working in Washington journalism, writing about politics, national security, foreign policy, American history, American politics since the 1980s. I've written three books about the CIA, so that's a particular specialty of mine. And I'm the editor of the JFK Facts blog, which is a blog about the assassination of President Kennedy. So that's what I bring to this conversation. So I'm open to your, you know, questions, and I'll tell you a little bit about where I'm coming from. You had mentioned before when we started talking about Oliver Stone, and you were interested in his movie. So I can tell you that that's really when my really serious interest in the subject dates to. When I was in the 1980s, I read a lot of JFK books. As a journalist, I was working as a journalist in Washington, and I was curious about the subject. It actually happened when President Kennedy was assassinated. I was in kindergarten. I don't remember anything about it. I do remember there was a lot happened at our house that weekend. A lot of people crowded around the TV, but I had no consciousness of it until many years later when I learned what had happened. President Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. So I kind of read a lot of the books, conspiracy books, so-called conspiracy books, and anti-conspiracy books. And I, you know, they were interesting to me. None of them seemed conclusive. I was surprised that they weren't better. I mean, as books, as accounts of history, you know, some of them weren't very good. They weren't very credible, weren't very believable. But I also thought the official story of one man alone killed the president, that didn't seem particularly credible to me either. So that was just kind of undecided in my mind until Oliver Stone came along. And I thought the movie was a very slick, professional piece of work, all those great actors, you know, and a very taught, you know, script, a great piece of cinema. Of course, it is cinema, right? It's not a documentary. He took liberties with the story. So, you know, I didn't blame him for that, but I thought it was very compelling. What happened after JFK, the movie, came out in 1992, something very important happened, which changed my attitude about the whole subject. People wagged their finger at Oliver Stone and said, you know, you're a bad boy. How dare you question the government's account of this great tragedy? And you're making stuff up and this conspiracy stuff is ridiculous. And Stone took a lot of grief for that. Well, Stone responded quite effectively in the movie. And at the end of the movie, he tacked on a little trailer after the movie, just text. And it said, you know, the government is hiding 90% of its records on Kennedy's assassination. If you think that's outrageous, this is 1992, it's 30 years after the crime. If you think that's outrageous, write to your congressman. Well, needless to say, Congress was inundated with mail saying, why are all of these records still secret? There was lots of conspiratorial suspicion around Kennedy's assassination from the day it happened. So that suspicion was still stronger, and Oliver Stone kind of tapped into it. Well, Congress was shamed into doing the right thing in 1992, and they passed the law unanimously. Imagine that. Congress acted unanimously. Every Democrat and every Republican agreed the government should make all of its JFK records public. And they passed the law, which said that. It was a very strong, good law called the JFK Records Act. And so starting in 1992, for the first time, we began to see the government's own records on the subject. They really, not much had been made public over the years. And there'd been several different investigations over the years, not just the Warren Commission, which was the first commission which investigated and said one man alone killed the president for no reason. That was the first story. Then there was another investigation in 1975 when the Rockefeller Commission, another high-level commission, investigated. And then there was the Church Committee, which was a Senate investigation. And then there was the House Select Committee on Assassinations. So, you know, people had reinvestigated the assassination multiple times, and there was a huge body of records out there, which nobody had ever seen. So starting in the 1990s, that body of records came into public view for the first time. And we began to understand the events leading up to the assassination in much more detail. And in my view, then what we learned steadily undermined the story that we had been told, that one man alone shot the president for no reason. And the new evidence suggested a much more complicated picture, in which it seems that it's quite possible that people were manipulating Lee Harvey Oswald, the supposed lone gunman, and that in fact there were conspiratorial forces behind the crime which laid the blame on Oswald and made him what he said he was, a patsy, the fall guy for the people who really perpetrated the crime. So when the JFK Records Act passed in 1992 and these records began to come into the National Archives here in Washington and the National Archives facility in College Park, Maryland, you could go out there and start looking at these records and get a whole new picture, of a much deeper picture of the Kennedy assassination. So that led me into really learning about these records and the process by which they were made public, a process which, by the way, is still going on to this day, 30 years later. We still don't have all of the JFK records yet. So that's where I got involved. And in these records, we began to, and I was able to write stories about the events leading up to the assassination. I didn't have a JFK theory, and I don't have a JFK theory. My approach is journalistic. As a journalist, I don't write about theories. I write about facts. I write about new facts in particular. So from these new records, I began to write about new stories, things that we hadn't known about people who were involved in the events leading up to the assassination. People knew, who, senior CIA officers who knew about Lee Harvey Oswald before the assassination, how certain CIA operations related to Oswald were hidden after the assassination. So all of these were things that I began to write about for the Washington Post, Slate, Salon, other national publications where I worked over the years. So that was kind of my foundation in the story. Because I wasn't really interested in chasing any conspiracy theories, I took a more historical approach. And so in my CIA biographies, I looked at the events of 1963, how the president was assassinated and what the response was, especially inside the CIA. That was kind of my specialty. What did people inside the CIA think about the assassination of Kennedy? And in my three books, my three CIA biographies, I explain what top people inside the CIA thought. And they did not think that the president had been killed by one man alone and unaided. These men inside the CIA, in the privacy of their own thoughts, knew that that was not true and that there was another story out there. And so that's one thing that emerges from my books, as you understand very clearly. The official story that was given to the public, one man alone and unaided, killed the president. Privately, people in power close to Kennedy did not believe it. Lots of them. So when you get this attitude from your friend, like, oh, you know, don't believe it, it's all very simple, you know, one man alone shot the president, you know, a lot of people did not believe that. A lot of very serious people, not conspiracy theorists, not crazy people, very smart, knowledgeable, well-informed people like former President Harry Truman. 1 month after Kennedy was killed, former President Truman called for the abolition of the CIA. Now, Truman didn't say the CIA killed Kennedy. He didn't need to say that. But that was his motivation. He thought, or suspected, or had reason to believe that the CIA might have been involved in Kennedy's death. And he thought that the CIA was thus a menace to democracy and to America's reputation and should be abolished. So Harry Truman didn't believe the official story. President Johnson, the man who appointed the Warren Commission, the man who succeeded JFK when JFK was killed, publicly, he endorsed the idea of a lone gunman. Privately, he never believed it. In 1967, he told an aide that he thought there'd been a conspiracy and he thought the CIA was involved. He's made similar remarks to a CBS camera crew in 1969 and to a writer from the Atlantic magazine in 1971. LBJ didn't believe the official story of a lone gunman. Jackie Kennedy, the president's widow, the woman closest to the crime, the president basically died in her arms after being shot. She didn't believe the official story. The president's closest advisor, his brother, Robert Kennedy, the attorney general, did not believe the official story. Yes, he endorsed it publicly. Privately, he never believed it and always suspected Cuban exiles and rogue CIA agents. So I could go on and on, but the point is, it's not crazy to think that the president was killed by his enemies. In fact, some of the smartest people in government and politics thought that the president had been killed by his enemies. So that is kind of, you know, my working conclusion about what we know, you know, from the whole story. Now, people will say, well, you know, what's your theory? Who killed Kennedy? And I say, I don't know who killed Kennedy. The president was killed by his enemies who had the ability to hide it. And that means, you know, probably people in the CIA. That doesn't mean that it was a CIA plot. The CIA people might have been working for the Defense Department, which they frequently do and frequently did. So we don't know the details of who was responsible, I believe, but we do know, we have a pretty good understanding that Oswald was manipulated into looking like the assassin and other people probably perpetrated the crime. But because of secrecy, because we don't have the whole story, all of the records yet, that's about as, you know, definitive as I can be, or as much as I can say. Now, we can drill down on the events of 1963 and talk about like what, you know, specifically happened, how many shots and all of that, which I'm glad to do. It's an important conversation to have. I don't want to get lost, you know, the forest for the trees. You know, the big picture is the evidence, the preponderance of evidence indicates that the president was killed by his enemies, you know, people within his own government who had the ability to implicate Oswald in the crime. So that's kind of, you know, where I'm coming from in this. And maybe I'll just leave it at that. And you can ask questions about, you know, what do you think of that? Or what do you know? What would you like to know?
Oh, I mean,
tell you about.
You're like a dictionary, or not a dictionary, you're like a textbook. You have all this stored up in your head, which is great. I love that. Mostly because I don't really like feeling the need to talk. That was awesome. I like learning about that too. You have a lot of information in your head. I don't want to go down the whole events of all the shots that were fired, any of that. I don't want to talk about that. What I want to talk about is, why is it still an issue that we're dealing with the disclosure of the documents today? That's what I start to question. Whenever that starts getting into context, and I think, you know, through studying the CIA, they do a lot of stuff that's manipulating and a lot of stuff that's a little bit out there for the general public would kind of be like, whoa. Now, it's not the CIA, it's the people that are involved in it. And it brings up a bigger question of what you said, the president's enemies. Now, when people hear that, they think, oh, it must have been like Russia or must have been this. Nobody ever thinks to question the people that are around him. And you have to think, is it possible that something, a force, could manipulate or do something that could kill the president, the person that everyone thinks is the safest person on the planet, which is probably the most, I wouldn't say not the safest at all, but people think is like well-guarded and protected, that something bigger or deeper, and how deep does that go, that force? And that's what I talk about, like an Illuminati type, but they go like, oh, it's not like people in the woods with shrouded cloaks. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. It's about cheating the system and making it work in your manner. If that's a bunch of people that are able to manipulate and find ways to be able to make sure that things flow in their direction, it's not hard to pay someone to kill them. But I mean, you got to ask questions. And my biggest questions are, why are the documents still disclosed? Why do we not have the 9/11 documents either? Are there? Oh, okay. So you have to redact the names. You have to go through the documents to see what you can give to the public. Okay. But that doesn't take this long. This is something that's been pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed.
Yes.
So no, people forget.
And yeah. No, and it's a very good question, Robbie, because, you know, I spoke about how, you know, really what opened up the case for us, for historians to really understand the events leading up to the assassination of President Kennedy at a deeper level, at a more granular level, was this JFK Records Act. And the JFK Records Act was a very strong law. Congress really was shamed into doing the right thing. They really empowered outsiders to come into these agencies, say, give us your JFK records, and we're going to make them public. And they took the decision, the control decision, away from the federal agencies and gave it to other people. That's very rare in the US government. So we got to see a lot of CIA and FBI records that we never would have gotten to see under any other circumstance. Now, one part of the JFK Records, the act, that was very precise was they said, look, if there is secret stuff in there, they took the CIA's interests into account. They said, you can request that it be postponed for a while, like to protect somebody who's a living agent, to protect their identity. Now, lots of living agents are named in these records, but there's other times when they want to keep the name secret. So the law made a provision for that. But the law said after 25 years, this is in 1992, after 25 years, make everything public. So the law was a full disclosure law, but it said you have 25 years actually to comply with the stuff that's most sensitive, you want to delay for the longest time. That was kind of a concession to the CIA. So 1992, 25 years later, is October 2017. And the question comes up, okay, are the CIA and the FBI going to make their JFK records public in October 1992? In October 2017. So the CIA, Mike Pompeo, the director of the CIA, goes to Trump and says, you can't possibly release this material. And so Trump, the conspiracy theorist, right? The guy who's supposedly taking on the deep state, Trump caves. Trump gives the CIA everything they want on JFK records. And so the CIA and the FBI and other federal agencies are allowed to continue to claim to withhold, you know, many thousands of JFK records. There's about 15,000 JFK records that remain that have some secret, you know, material in them. Most of those are from the CIA, probably 75 to 80% of them. So in 2017, Trump caves, gives the CIA four more years of secrecy. And Trump says, these federal agencies get to withhold this material for four more years, and then we'll revisit it. So fast forward to October 2021. Now Biden is president, and the question is kicked to him. What is the CIA going to release this material? The CIA goes to Biden and says, we can't release this stuff because we just haven't had time to get at it. You know, COVID just made it impossible. The Washington Post called me up and asked me for comment. They said, what's going on here? COVID? I said, yeah, this is the COVID dog ate my homework excuse. They've had 25 years, now 29 years to comply with this law, and they're blaming COVID because they haven't gotten around to it. It's a ridiculous excuse. And the CIA really doesn't want to comply with this law. So Biden issues an order last October, and he says, okay, we'll extend the deadline one more time. So now we're into December 15th, 2022. And that's when federal agencies are supposed to comply. So you ask, why don't we have these records? That is the history of it. We don't have these records because the CIA mostly, and the FBI a little bit, just don't want to cough up this information.
They killed the president. They killed the president. That's
100%
what you just told me. I'm sitting here like, they killed the fucking president, man.
Well, I mean, you know, look, we don't have the records. So, you know, I'm reluctant to jump to conclusions, but that's a perfectly reasonable conclusion. I mean, they have something to hide. They're hiding a lot of stuff. So, you know, you can say, well, they're hiding nothing, you know, like, let's trust the CIA. They're not hiding anything. Just believe them. Okay, well, you know, I've been around Washington a long time, reported a lot on the CIA, and, you know, a lot of times you get a cover story from the CIA. So, no, I'm not going to believe that. Show us the records. It's the law, right? It's not complicated. The law says all this stuff should have been made public 5 years ago. So the CIA doesn't want to comply. I mean, yeah, draw your own conclusions. To me, it's quite suspicious. So that's the reason why. Now, that's the bureaucratic explanation why. What's going on here, you'll ask? You know, the information that they're hiding, and we have a good idea about what's withheld. Some of these documents, it'll be like a, you know, you'll see a page of material, and then just one paragraph will be blanked out. So we know something about these documents. These are not unknown. And so the information in them might not be that serious, but what the CIA fears, I believe, is that when you do put everything out there, people will begin to step back and say, hey, what does this tell us in the big picture? And so it's always in their interest to have a little bit of secrecy, because then that muddies the picture. And people say, oh, you know, it's crazy conspiracy theory. Then, you know, they pay no attention. And they kind of get this, you know, almost like psychological warfare going, where they sort of discredit the idea of asking any questions. And it's crazy because Congress passed this law unanimously, right? Every Democrat, every Republican, anybody you talk to says it's a no-brainer. This happened 60 years ago. You know, release the documents, and the CIA still won't do it. So I think that, you know, they're fearful that there's something in there that's embarrassing. Now, let me say one more thing about that, right? Some people say, well, come on, 60 years ago, everybody involved is dead, and, you know, who could possibly care? That's true. But if you think about the Kennedy assassination, like why we're still talking about it, why young people like you are interested in it, you know, is it's still symbolically very important in American culture. And that's something that Oliver Stone touched on. It was like, this is something that lives on in American culture, this mystery. How did the president of the United States come to be shot dead in broad daylight? How did that happen? What's the explanation? And, you know, we really don't have a good explanation. So if something does come out in the last of the CIA records and it's embarrassing to the CIA, that could be very damaging to the CIA in 2022, you know, in terms of their budget for next year, in terms of what happens when CIA officials testify in Congress. They could all of a sudden be in for a very hard time and have to explain embarrassing things. And, you know, and they don't want to do that. They want to, you know, fight wars and do the things that the CIA does today. They don't want to be held accountable for what happened 60 years ago, even though it looks very, very bad for them. Not even though, especially because it looks very, very bad for them. And the accumulation of evidence is pointing to CIA malfeasance of some sort or another, or incompetence. It's so the story still has real potential to embarrass the CIA today. And so that's another reason why people care, because JFK, the JFK story occupies this special place in American imagination and American political culture. This, you know, this remarkable, astonishing event, decisive, formative event. So those are the reasons why it's still sensitive. You know, and so, you know, later this year, President Biden, his lawyers, top officials at the CIA are going to have to get around a table and think about this one more time and decide, what are we going to do? So it's still a live issue in Washington. It feels like ancient history because it happened a long time ago, but it's still reverberating today in Washington.
Now, what I would get called a conspiracy person for is what I'm about to say is that the reason why I think that they keep pushing it is hoping that people will forget or people won't want to move on. Now, people have largely forgot, unless you're involved in wanting to get the documents out there. People have largely just gone on with their lives. But if you talk about JFK, people will bring up the subject and you'll see eyes start to spark up with interest, much like 9/11. Everyone wants to know the documents that they're holding back from that, even though everyone gets the story and understands what happened. It's just like JFK. The president got shot on national television, okay? That's a very...
He wasn't shot on national television.
He wasn't shot on national television?
No. The assassination was filmed by a bystander, Abraham Zapruder. And he filmed it on his Super 8 camera. And that film was developed. That film was, the government took possession of it. But it was not broadcast. It was not a TV broadcast. It was a home movie taken at the crime scene. It was not broadcast on television until 12 years later in 1975, when a copy leaked and Geraldo Rivera played it on his ABC News show. That was the first time people saw it. And so, and now that footage, it's called the Zapruder film, is in the public record and you can get it on YouTube. But that was not broadcast live at the time. Just that's by way of explanation.
I'm glad you corrected me, because that means you're actually being honest with the information as well, too. For me, it's just I'm looking at YouTube video clips, so it looks like it would be on TV back then, the way it was portrayed.
Right. So it wasn't. But the point being, and your point is a good one, the Zapruder film is shocking. I mean, it's shocking to see a man shot and killed, you know, to see the images of that. And so that heightens the impact of the story. And that's one reason why it is remembered, because it lives on in this photographic artifact, in this photographic evidence, which depicts the crime as it happened.
You know what? It's funny. After talking with you for a little bit, I started to realize, because I had a person, when I mentioned JFK before, bring up, did you know it could be the Secret Service men that killed him? Now that I think about the Secret Service men that could have possibly did that and be like, oh, that's a great way to get out of the fact that you've been delaying documents for almost 29 years now.
Yeah, you know, let me just say this about the Secret Service man story. This is one of the most persistent JFK bullshit conspiracy. it is a hoax. It's an utter hoax, because if you look at the evidence from the crime scene, right? So the Secret Service man theory, and theory is a generous word to apply to this idiotic idea, is that when shots rang out, the Secret Service man turned around and accidentally discharged his gun, and that killed Kennedy. Okay, we have a photographic account of the assassination, Abraham Zapruder's film. Okay, there's no evidence of this happening on Zapruder's film. There were several hundred people gathered around the limousine as it passed by, as the fatal shots were fired at Kennedy. None of them said anything like that happened. It's not consistent with the wounds that were found on the president's body. In other words, no eyewitnesses supported it. In other words, it's completely made up, completely. From beginning to end, it is a hoax. And yet it persists, because it's kind of funny. And like you say, you know, this is the pernicious part of stupid JFK conspiracy theories. They're a way of not talking about what happened. They're a way of making fun of what happened. And the Secret Service man did it theory is like, it's a very persistent hoax, which has a very negative effect of, you know, suggesting to people that this is all a joke. Okay. It's not a joke. That scenario is a hoax and a joke, and not a very funny joke, you know, but it does stick around and people will repeat it. So the next time somebody repeats it to you, just tell them that there's zero evidence for it anywhere. It's a hoax.
Yeah. When I watched the actual videos, like in my junior year of high school, and our teacher played it on the big screen, and I remember watching it again alone, right after that class, on YouTube, and watching him grab his throat, where you see the bullet go through his throat. But then when I print out the Wikipedia and I'm researching about him and I'm doing all this type of stuff, I looked and found out that the reason why because people would always bring up the point that he couldn't bend down. Why didn't he bend down if he was getting shot? Usually people hunch over, like, why is that not happening? He was wearing a back brace. He's been known to have back problems, and it kept them propped up for that thing. Where I start wondering, did the person, when he got shot, did people know that he wouldn't be able to duck out of the way? Because he sits there and takes three shots. Now, I know they happen quick, but when you're watching it, like the one idea of a lone gunman, I'm like, look, man, like it looks like it's coming from different angles, in my opinion, when you see the close up of it. But I mean, I'm not an expert person that can watch all.
Well, I mean, you know, your impression is certainly a valid one. The CIA director at the time was a man named John McCone. He was the director of the CIA in 1963. He'd been appointed by Kennedy. He was very good friends with Robert Kennedy, actually. John McCone was. They were both devout Catholics, observant Catholics. So they had that in common and they were friendly. After the assassination, McClone, the CIA obtained a copy of Zapruder's film and they analyzed it and they showed it to senior officials and they showed it to McClone. And McClone saw the film and he later went and talked to his friend, Robert Kennedy. And he said, he told Robert Kennedy that the film showed that the president had been hit by gunfire from two different directions. So your observation that it looks like the president is hit by gunfire from two different directions, that was shared by the director of the CIA himself at the time. But it was not known at the time that Kennedy was wearing that back brace, or really, you know, that the president's health was rather more precarious than people knew. There was not a lot of transparency around the president's health at that time. More recent presidents have been much more forthcoming. So, the fact that Kennedy was wearing that back brace is a factor.
Why the change of route? They had a random change of route where they went through in a different area before than the pre-planned one that they had.
Well, the route was never fixed. It was only suggested in a general way, in the terms of the early publicity about the president's trip. It had been announced back in September that the president was going to come to Texas for a political trip in November. But the exact route was not set. So when you say the route was changed, I mean, my understanding of the process is that many things were possible, and it was the final route was not settled on until shortly before, you know, the president went. These plans were in flux. You know, the question, why was the president routed in along that way, and why wasn't there more security, is a very good one. People have done research about Kennedy's other trips where he made similar trips to other cities, for example, like he had been in Miami just 4 days before, and he was there under very tight security, never appeared outside, never appeared in an open air car. Same with the president was in Chicago in early November 1963. There were possible threats to his life there, and security around him was very tight. In comparison to all of the president's other trips in the 1963, the security in Dallas was the most lax. And we don't really have a good explanation of why that was. One of the interesting things about the Kennedy assassination is, you know, let's just assume for a second that one man alone, an unaided, shot and killed the president. Okay, we're not going to argue about that. Let's just say that's true. Shouldn't somebody have lost their job? You know, somebody in the CIA, they've been watching this guy for 4 years. Somebody in the Secret Service, they were supposed to be on, you know, protecting the president. After the assassination of President Kennedy, not only was no one ever brought to justice for the crime, no one even lost their job. And to me, that always seemed very suspicious to me. Why was no one held accountable? And I think the reason is because nobody wanted to look closely at what the CIA and the Secret Service did in the run-up to November 22nd, 1963. And I would say, in support of that argument, look at what's going on today. They're still, you know, they still don't want to talk about it. They still don't want to talk about it.
The one thing I keep getting attached to, like MK Ultra mind control stuff, and I know that gets kind of labeled as conspiracy, but MK Ultra was real. They did practice ways to manipulate the brain and do all these types of things. When it comes to the idea of a sleeper agent, what I can't get over is Oswald, when he's saying, I'm being set up. And then he gets killed by Ruby. And you're like, did they just kill the person that, like, you would want them arrested? You wouldn't want to kill the, like, that's what it right there is where it starts getting complicated. And like, I can understand why. Well, I mean, look, with a skeptic is just trying to debunk a bunch of stuff that's been known as conspiracies. But the issue becomes is, when you know this is a questionable subject, the JFK thing is something where it's curious at the most. It's curious, but they deny it and they go with the official narrative. It's one gunman. It's all this type of stuff. And I'm like, does that, if you, when any journalist, you don't have to have eyes to even look at that and see that there's something off about this. There's something else at hand, but there's people that want to believe the official narrative. And then even though now the narrative's changing or it keeps evolving or doing whatever, but then it gets attached with conspiracies as well too, which goes into, oh, it was a sleeper agent that did that. I have no clue because we haven't seen anything really be manifested like that before. We've seen documents and ideas of it, but never a full-on thing like that. But then it gets attached elsewhere where the general public like myself is sitting there like, this is something that's never going to be solved. And that's what it becomes an issue.
Well,
because it gets attached.
Well, so somebody once said, we need to understand the assassination of the president in the context of what's called covert action. Covert action is secret, illegal manipulations of society to achieve, you know, certain ends. And that's what the CIA does in foreign countries. They engage in covert action. Now, sometimes these can be kind of kinetic military or paramilitary operations, assassination, terrorism, paramilitary activities. It can also be non-military activities, psychological warfare, deception, intrigue, false flag operations. And so when you look at the assassination of Kennedy and what the CIA knew about Lee Harvey Oswald in the 4 years before he allegedly shot the president, you know, the official story was, we didn't know anything about this guy. He came out of nowhere and shot the president. Okay, we now know that's a lie. That's a cover story. Lee Harvey Oswald was very well known to a half dozen CIA officers at the top of the CIA, undercover officers.
They were reading his mail.
They were reading his mail. They knew about his politics. They knew about his private life. They knew about his political beliefs. So he was very well known, and these CIA officers were in a position to manipulate him. Now, if that's what happened in the course of, let's say, a CIA operation, that operation would be designed and carried out with the goal of making sure that it was never detected. In other words, as one CIA veteran put it, your operation stays secret from conception to eternity. Nobody outside a small group of people knows it, and you have constructed the crime so that nobody ever will know it. So what we're looking for when we look at CIA operations around Oswald is the manifestations of an interest, right, that is being closely held. Okay, they're not going to put it on paper, but they are going to act on it because it is a covert operation. And so this is what we're looking at when we look at the Kennedy assassination record, is how do we tease out a covert activity, secret psychological warfare operations that are designed to be deniable, that they are designed so that there's never any evidence of CIA involvement. So with this record that we have gained of the Kennedy assassination over the years, we are now in a position to do that, where we can understand how the CIA worked and how they mounted operations, and in particular, how they mounted operations around Oswald. So that's kind of the state of the case now, is we're getting to understand just what was going on because we have a lot of detail.
When it comes to why would they take him out? I've heard Oliver Stone mention that JFK didn't actually want to go to war, nuclear war, but that was kind of the whole platform was, or not nuclear war. And I guess I'm getting that wrong. It's the Iran-Contra thing, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
At the heart of Kennedy's presidency and the events that ended it is the issue of Cuba. And President Kennedy, twice in his short presidency, declined to overthrow the government of Cuba. The first time was April 1961, when the CIA sponsored an invasion force to overthrow the government of the communist government of Fidel Castro. That invasion failed, and Kennedy declined to provide U.S. air support to the Cubans fighting Castro, and so they lost. And a lot of them, about 120 men were killed, and more than 1,000 were taken prisoner. So after that, Kennedy was hated in Cuban Miami by the Cubans who were fighting Fidel Castro, and also by the CIA officers who were doing the same. So that was one strike against Kennedy. The second strike against Kennedy was the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, when Kennedy declined to go to war to remove the Soviet missiles and instead negotiated a peaceful settlement. Okay. Kennedy did this without consulting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff or with the CIA for that matter. This made Kennedy very, very unpopular in the military and intelligence circles in the US government. In fact, hated. He was regarded as a weakling, if not a traitor. And so this anti-Kennedy sentiment was very, very strong in 1963. And at that time, the Pentagon adopts a plan called North Woods, which is a plan to provoke an invasion of Cuba with a false flag operation. And the basic concept of North Woods, which was not disclosed publicly until 1997, was this. What the United States needs to do, said the Pentagon, is create a pretext in which Cuba appears as an irresponsible rogue state, and then the United States will have justification for invading and overthrowing with its 82nd Airborne Army. And so the plan was to stage a spectacular crime in the United States and arrange for the blame to fall on Castro. Okay, this wasn't dreamed up by Oliver Stone. This was the official policy of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the US government in mid-1963. And so on November 22nd, somebody stages a spectacular attack on the President of the United States and kills him. And immediately, CIA assets go into action seeking to blame the crime on Cuba. And to me, what we see on November 22nd sure looks like carrying out something that was conceptualized in Operation North Woods. Now, that doesn't mean Operation North Woods was a plan to kill the president. I don't think it's quite that simple. But I do think that the most likely suspects for organizing the assassination of the president and blaming it on Oswald are the men who worked on Operation North Woods in 1963, because that sure looks like a template for the crime. So that's where kind of what we know now. And that's why I think that's a very important piece of what we have learned in the last 25 years is how the crime of Dallas might have been conceptualized.
Do you have any questions when you go through this, like doing the archive and everything as well too? Do you have any questions that you just don't have answers to, or you wonder like, why haven't that been released yet?
Lots of them. We don't know what happened with Operation North Woods. Most of those documents seem to have been destroyed. But there are traces in the official record of CIA activity around Oswald that are still secret. So, you know, like, I'd like to see those records. I think that they could be very important and revelatory. Those are among the records that are still withheld. You know, who pulled this thing together, right? We know something about how it worked at the street level in Miami and New Orleans, but who was in charge of the CIA operations that involved Oswald? And there's one that we know about for sure, an operation called AMSPEL, which was a political action and propaganda program run out of Miami, designed to take on Fidel Castro. And the AMSPEL network, which was young Cuban students who had taken up arms against Castro, the AMSPEL network had a whole series of encounters with Oswald before the assassination, creating the public legend that he was a supporter of Castro. And on the day of the assassination, these CIA assets go public with this information, effectively laying the blame for the crime on Cuba, as would be suggested in a pretext operation like Operation North Woods. So we see the outlines of the crime. What we don't know is the identity of the specific people who were, you know, okaying this operation or making it go forward. That information is still buried very, very deeply.
Do you think that we're ever going to get the actual answer of this? Or do you think the documents are just going to keep getting pushed? I mean, it's been 29 years almost.
I think that the CIA is going to continue to delay. But I do think that full disclosure is going to have an effect. I mean, you know, when it finally happens, I don't know. You know, Biden doesn't have a lot of incentive to cross the CIA at this point. He needs the CIA for his current needs. He doesn't want to piss them off. The CIA is very cranky about this subject. They're very defensive. They don't even want to pretend like, you know, they're going to meet the public interest. They're just going to stonewall because they're scared. You know, they do have a lot to lose. And so I don't think that we're going to get it soon. But, you know, you never know. You never know. There's a lot of interest. And maybe Biden will tell the CIA, look, cut the crap, get this thing out there. I don't want to think about this thing anymore. I'm hoping that Biden will do that. That would be a very sensible thing to do. And it would meet the public interest totally, and which ensure that the law was being respected, which it is not being now. So, you know, I've been at this a long time. I'm condemned to optimism. I would put it that way.
How much have you learned about through just government manipulation, but just these tactics that are used? It seems like a giant fraternity in a sense. Like, you know, politics are a lot like high school.
Well, the CIA is a global clandestine service, okay? It's an organization, employs about 20,000 people. It's got about $15 billion a year budget. And, you know, they engage in covert action worldwide. So as someone once said to me, you know, the CIA is a law-breaking agency. It's not a law-making agency. And that's true. And, you know, to me, it's self-evident that we need to keep such an organization, you know, watched very carefully. It's very powerful and it's very difficult to do. And they've got a lot of advantages. But, you know, we live in an open society. We have the ability to challenge them. And we've learned a lot about them. And they have been held accountable by American democracy and things like the Freedom of Information Act. So, you know, yes, they are this giant fraternity, very ominous and sinister in a lot of ways. But look, you know, they act in our name. So it's up to us to do something about it, or at least inform ourselves so that we have some idea of what's going on. And that, you know, that's what I tried to do.
I think you come at it with a very reasonable and rational understanding of the whole situation as well, too, especially even if you corrected me on a couple of things that I was getting wrong, because you actually care about getting the honest answer out there. I'm curious, do you happen to have a lot of critics or people that are really trying to criticize you on the just either calling you a conspiracy person? I mean, Oliver Stone, if you hear him talk, he's very rational, but he gets called a conspiracy person.
Yeah, well, you know, people don't call me a conspiracy theorist because they know I've been doing this for 30 years and you can Google me and you can do everything and you will not find my conspiracy theory because I don't have one. And I've been writing about this in detail for 30 years and I still don't have a theory. So I have a very factual approach, which is why, like Chuck Todd said, Jeff Morley's the guy to go to separate fact from fiction on the JFK assassination, because I've been doing it a long time and I do separate fact from fiction and don't jump to conclusions. Yes, that said, I do have critics and people are very fearful and attack me for saying the things I say. But I'll tell you something. One, they never say I'm a conspiracy theorist. And two, they never say that I have my facts wrong. Okay. If I tell you something that happened about the Kennedy assassination, you can pretty much bank on it. You know, I don't blow smoke. If I don't know it, or if it's not true, or if it's shaky, I don't repeat it. I don't repeat bullshit conspiracy theories, and I don't repeat bullshit facts. Separate the fact from the fiction, get the record set, get the historical record set, and then we can talk about what happened. So that's where we're at now, 29 years after 30 years after the passage of the JFK Records Act. Wait, but let's just get the picture here. So, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, who killed JFK? I used to say, it's too early to tell. And people always thought that was very funny because, like, too early to tell 60 years later. But, you know, if you look at history, some great historical controversies take 50 or 100 years to sort out, you know, before we realize what, you know, what really happened. You know, like, for example, the story of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. You know, Thomas Jefferson had this long-term relationship with this woman who he owned, you know, his enslaved property. If you had asked the experts 50 years ago, you know, like the same people who say the lone gunman theory, if you'd asked them 50 years ago, did Thomas Jefferson have a relationship with this woman? They would have said, that's ridiculous. It's a conspiracy theory. It's a rumor, anti-American. Pay no attention to it. Think nothing of it. Today, pretty much historians totally agree that is definitely true. You know, that definitely happened. We have DNA evidence and we have a lot of evidence that it's true. So expert opinion can totally change in the course of 50 years. And I think that that's what will happen in due time with the assassination of President Kennedy. People will come to realize that the official story simply isn't true and that there is a better explanation out there. And I think we're going to get there, but it's going to take a while.
I hope you're right, because I just feel like with time, people just stop caring. And we're so like fighting amongst each other right now that it's ridiculous. And I think it's just getting worse.
I know. And let me say, this is one thing that I like about the JFK story. The JFK story is not a culture war. It's not part of the culture war. I have friends who like President Trump. Myself, I'm not a fan of him. But, you know, my people in my family, friends like President Trump. And you know what? We might disagree about a lot of things, but on the JFK story, me and my Trump friends, we see totally eye to eye. The government needs to come clean on this. There's no differentiation. There's no red and blue America on this question. I don't argue with my Trump friends about that. They say, Jeff, go for it. You know, they know my politics. They say, go for it. And when I say to them, you know, yeah, we agree on this. We don't disagree. And so people, you know, kind of say, oh, JFK conspiracy theories, blah, blah, blah. I think it's a positive thing. I think there's an overwhelming consensus that transcends all our partisan political differences at the moment, which says the government needs to come clean on this. It's time.
I just got one more question about JFK, then I had a separate question completely different from JFK. Woody Harrelson, what the hell does he have to do with it? His dad on the grassy knoll?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. You know, this is an imponderable. Charles Harrelson was a tough guy, a bad guy, definitely, you know, capable of killing. But I don't think that the evidence supports that that he was involved in November 22nd.
Okay. And then my separate question away from the JFK thing is the last thing we'll wrap up on, which is, you ever heard of the Franklin scandal or Franklin hoax with the CIA, John DeCamp?
No.
Okay.
Tell me more. Maybe I have.
It was about like a child or pedophilia that was going on in the CIA. He exposed that. He was under William Colby.
Oh, yes. I mean, I've heard of it. I don't know anything about it.
I've had like 3 CIA people on here and I brought that up and no one knows what I'm talking about. And they say it's a hoax, but I'm like, there's like 6 different HBO on demand things on it. And I'm like, I don't know. That just seems like there has to be some weight to it.
I wouldn't assume that, you know, these urban legends can grow and spread, like, you know, like the Secret Service man did it. And, you know, and the fact that they're spreading doesn't mean that there's something to it. So I don't know anything about it. I can't help you on that one.
What about William Colby's death?
William Colby's death, I think is suspicious. I didn't used
Thank
to think-
you. John Prados told me there's nothing suspicious about it. I was like, hang on a second. He's 74 kayaking at midnight. That's nuts, dude. Wait, he was in the CIA for what? Like a long time. And he had his doors unlocked. Questionable, bro.
He wasn't canoeing at midnight. Let me just say that his body was found several days later. but he had left a lunch behind him. I didn't think so, but I talked to somebody recently in the CIA whose judgment I trust, and he said he thought that the death was suspicious. He didn't know or didn't offer any explanation of what had happened. So I take that a little more seriously than I used to. I'll put it that way.
All right. Fair point. Jeff, I would love to have you back on the show because you have, especially going through the CIA and everything like that, at least the information and the history of it as well, too. You have a couple specific people that I've seen you wrote books on, and I'm just curious, and I probably will have more questions about those as well, too. Mostly because I like these characters that are involved in these organizations. Like, what takes for a person to join the CIA, and why do they want to do it?
Yeah, and you should read my books because they are, in addition to stories of spies and espionage and bad deeds and all of that, they're also the story of men, of interesting men, very capable, very smart, very serious about what they do, like them or not. And so if you're looking at kind of what motivates and how do CIA officers and officials act, my three books, Our Man in Mexico, The Ghost, and Scorpion's Dance, will illuminate you definitely about the reality of their world.
And where can people find these books?
Barnes & Noble. Scorpion's Dance will be out in June. That's available via Barnes & Noble. The Ghost was published in 2017, available on Amazon. Also, Our Man in Mexico, published by University of Kansas Press, also available on Amazon. So those books are out there, and read them and we'll talk again.
And where can people find your JFK blog and any of your other links as well too, Jeff?
The JFK Facts blog is jfkfacts.org. You can buy my books at jeffersonmorleybooks.com, including autographed copies of the book. You can follow me on Twitter at Jefferson Morley.
And I'll make sure I link it all in the description. And I appreciate you doing the podcast. And thanks for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank.